getting the time wrong.
That's okay. No problem at all. Don't worry about that. It's great to have you, and thanks for using your time to speak to me as well.
No problem.
So it's no problem at all. How's your day been? Has it been hectic or?
Oh, not too bad.
No, that's good.
How about you?
Yes, it's been quite busy because the executive producer Jo is off on holiday next week. She's going to North Carolina, and then she's going up to Chicago to do some interviews for this program we're making. So we've just kind of been making sure I've got all the interviews lined up in place for her when she arrives in the States, and other people are kind of on leave or other people are in the States recording different programs. So I've kind of been by myself this afternoon, so it's been very quiet. Yes.
And it's actually like 4 o'clock to you, isn't it, in the afternoon?
It is. It's five now, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So we've got a bank holiday on Monday, so we've got a long weekend, and my folks are up visiting, so I'll be seeing them later on this evening. So, it's going okay. Everything's going quite smooth at the moment, which is a bit disconcerting when it runs according to plan.
Yes.
Do you know if we're ready to roll? Are you okay at your end there?
I'm good. Wayne, I'm rolling right now, so,
Fabulous. Okay.
Go for it.
Fantastic. Okay. Okay, Karen, well, I've managed to get some levels from you then as we were talking, so that's all great. Just make sure I'm rolling this end. Can I just ask you, Karen, just to kick off, just by introducing yourself and just to let me know kind of your role at the moment and your role back in the 70s.
Well, you want me just to go with it?
Sorry, I'm just checking my Pro Tools is running here. Yeah, that's fine. That'd be fantastic. And then I've got kind of a few questions, but just a sort of general introduction first about yourself.
Okay. I'm Karen Cook, and I work for SoundWorks in Houston, Texas, and I have the dubious honor of being the first female disco DJ back in the 70s. I worked for McFadden Kendrick, who owned several nightclubs regionally. I was the programmer, so I would receive the music, scan it for hot songs, determine the hits, write down the beats per minute, and then get it out to the other clubs and DJs with information.
Fabulous. Fantastic. Thank you very much. Okay, Karen. I'll just kick off by just asking you, when you first became aware of disco or the word disco and what it meant to you then and what does it mean to you now?
I grew up loving to dance. It was just something that I loved. All through college, I loved to dance. The problem I had with most bars or pubs was that it was just a place where guys hung out and drank beer and just wasn't the kind of place that I would want to go. If you wanted to hear good music, you would have to go to a concert and dance by yourself or with your date or whatever. It wasn't the same. When I was about 16 years old and I had an older woman take me and pretend like she was my mother, so I could get into this club, I walked in and I saw people dancing to Donna Summers, and I just fell in love with disco. I said, this is what I've been looking for. And the great thing was that you could go and you could, you didn't even have to have a partner. You could have your girlfriend and you could go out on the dance floor. You could dance from the time you got there till the time you left. It was just fabulous. You didn't even have to drink if you didn't really want to. Disco now. I think disco is not dead. I saw all the bumper stickers that said disco sucks, and I just never believed that. To me, disco is not dead. The name has changed. Now it's a dance or trance or house or whatever, but it's still dance music. And to me, that's the intriguing part and the fun part.
Fabulous, fantastic. Thank you so much for that, Karen. That's brilliant. I just wanted. My next question was going to ask you actually, what people were enjoying disco back in at that time, and did the kind of social makeup of people enjoying disco, going to disco, did that change?
I believe it did. When I first discovered disco, it was all about the fun and about the dance and just the energy that was on the dance floor from the music. And as it progressed and as I became a DJ, I began to see just the face of the club changing with the advent of cocaine and poppers and so many things that people were doing, the promiscuous sex in the hallways and in the stairwells and all that around the disco, the scene kind of changed. But originally it was about the dance and about the fun. I don't know if you are interested. I remembered the classic pickup line, which now is such a huge joke. What's your sign, baby? Because the pickup line was the format of the day. The guys were wearing the Kiana shirts unbuttoned down to the navel. Say that again for you. Kiana shirts unbuttoned down to the navel. Unlike today, to be a real man, you had to have chest hair hanging out of that shirt. And, you know, disco was a stage, and several regulars that came into the club every night used to use it to play out their fantasies. There was this one guy, can't even remember his name, but he was a great big guy, wasn't attractive at all, but he had this huge ring that must have stuck up a half inch or maybe even an inch, and it was a European castle. And he used to tell the women that that was his castle, and you know, that supposedly that was to impress them so that they would want to date him. But that was pretty typical, you know, in the club with the people that were there.
Fantastic. Thank you for that, Karen. I just wanted to actually come back and actually ask you about if you could kind of just paint for me a picture of some of the vivid sights and sounds that sort of, you know, spring to mind. When you think of like the disco and the golden age, you were there in the clubs. What kind of, if you could paint a few more pictures of those sights and sounds on one of the sort of the best, one of the best nights you probably, you know, experienced.
Oh, you bet. The club that I worked at, the club where I worked in my final years, was Elan. It was owned by a company called McFadden Ventures, and they were stellar at what they did. They commissioned a study of music effects on men and women. They tried to find out what frequencies were the most stimulating, and they actually tuned their sound system accordingly to just make the club more exciting and make people want to come back. It was an exclusive member-only club. It was $1,000 for a membership. We had lots of famous celebrities that frequented. If you were a beautiful girl, however, you were allowed in free, of course. but the sound of the disco was... I walked in the club, and there was an immediate energy there. Songs like I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor, which now is still popular today. One of my favorites was Turn the Beat Around by Vicki Sue Robinson, and it was so high energy and fun, and everybody loved it. And the minute you put it on, people would jump up out of their seats and run to the dance floor. Songs that today are used on commercials, like That's the Way I Like It, Shake, Shake, Shake Your Booty, and Got to Give It Up by Casey and the Sunshine Band. I mean, those are just classic disco songs that'll just live on forever. And, of course, I know that those commercials are appealing to our market, the people who love the disco music, but it was a fabulous era for those who lived through it. And, of course, there were the really bad songs, like Miko, the Star Wars disco mix. That was really bad, even as much as I love Star Wars. And, of course, the spoof Disco Duck, which was one of the first songs that I played, that in Brick House, one of the first songs that I played when I started. There were so many great things about disco, and even though I personally love to dance to Casey and the Sunshine Band, I was also the typical female who swooned over the voice of Lou Rawls and Barry White whispering those sweet nothings. It was great era. I could tell you stories upon stories of people who came in and what they were like, but I don't know.
Fantastic. We might have a chance to do some of those in it later on, actually.
Okay.
Can I just ask you about how, when you saw it go from underground, kind of being a more minority, to, if you could pinpoint the tipping point when it went completely, you know, big mainstream commercial, sound when it went everywhere out into the suburbs of the States and when it was all over the airwaves. Could you kind of sort of pinpoint that sort of progression of it and the tipping point?
I believe it was around 1978. I started in 1974, which I feel like were kind of the first years of disco. And in 1978 or so, it really exploded onto the mainstream. And we had so many people coming into the disco. And like, for example, even ZZ Top and their promoter came into the club one night. They were no dummies. They knew how effective the play of a song was in the disco. And they came in one night and offered me $200 to play one of their rock songs. You know, record sales were often dependent on floor play in the clubs, and they knew that. So even the rockers were coming into the disco wanting to take advantage of that. And that was about that time. And I was on my way out about that time. I got married and moved on with my life, but that was really when it moved to the mainstream.
What was the effect of Saturday Night Fever, the film, and the soundtrack? What type of effect did that have on the disco scene as well?
It was probably the most requested music. The music from Saturday Night Fever was very, very popular. Those of us in the disco that loved disco music really were not huge fans, only that it got people on the dance floor. But, you know, the falsetto and all that, you know, I was not a huge fan of that. And also, I believe it kind of increased the concept of the promiscuity on the dance floor, and a lot of the concepts that were in the movie were really played out after that.
Thank you for that, Karen. Fantastic. Can I ask you if you're aware of the feud between rock and disco, if the disco demolition nights and kind of people having anti-disco parties or radio shows, were you aware of that, of those things going on?
Yes, kind of like the guys there with the rockers and the mods. We had the rockers and the disco. My husband, the guy that I ended up marrying, was a famous rock jock in Houston, and he had never listened to disco when I met him. And, of course, I was in the disco, and I had never listened to him on the radio. So probably that's why he liked me. I think I was the only female in the city that had not heard of him. So, we saw that played out in our life. And he really, really didn't like disco and had never listened to it and just didn't get the concept. Many of my friends were into the disco sex concept and had the bumper stickers, and we saw graffiti on the walls and all that. There was definitely an anti-disco movement that happened. And I don't know where that came from. I know the DJs were really big on trying to crush disco, and I'm not sure if it's because it affected the rock concerts, whether the people were not going to the concerts anymore, or some people say that it was actually the power of the record label that caused that. The record label, it was very expensive to produce disco. I know a lot of people think that, hey, you just record a track and you slow it down, speed it up, and lay the disco over that. But actually, it was very complicated. And the people that it required to produce disco was very complex. You had to have composers and experienced arrangers and orchestrators and the producers with the creative touch. And, you know, it was very complex and very expensive to do compared to what they had done before. So, you know, some people believe that that was the demise of disco, was when the record labels began to press in on the DJs on the radio to crush disco. So I loved disco, and so I didn't really participate in a lot of that, but I did hear about it.
Brilliant. Thank you for that, Karen. When I've been doing some of my research, some people are kind of in books have hinted that some of the rock fans, there might have been hints of kind of homophobia or racism or sexism, because disco was synonymous with with the audience being sort of having a large audience of gay, black, Latino, and females. What would you say about that? Is that something you had any kind of inkling of, an undercurrent?
I have heard that. I've heard that how to word this? there was a huge influx of gays and the AIDS population, which, you know, I guess if you looked at the dance floor, you realize that a third of those people were probably going to die. And it did kind of change the face of things. It didn't for me, but in fact, for me, on my night off, I would go down to the gay bar and hang out with Ram Rocha, who was the fabulous DJ there in Houston, because he was great, and the music that they were able to play for the gay audience was much prettier than what we had to play in the regular disco. So it wasn't for me, but I have heard that.
Fantastic. Thank you for that, Karen. Just picking up on the sort of the different styles of music there, could you just kind of take me through if there was kind of like a bit of a regional difference in the style of disco, the tempo, or the style of music? And like you said there, in the gay discos, it was a different sound. I don't know if you could just kind of elaborate on those areas of the difference in style.
I want to call it a Euro disco sound, which is a little lighter in the beat. With where I worked, I had to play a lot of really heavy groove in the music, whereas Ram Rocha could play the really great Euro sound that I could not. And the Euro sound, I just mean that it was the beat was fast, but the groove was a little bit lighter. And it's more like the house music is now.
Fabulous, fantastic. Thank you for that. When you say the groove, is that, do you mean kind of like the bass and the drums and the bass?
Yes. Yes. You know, everybody was really into, you know, 4 feet on four on the floor kind of dance step, and it required a really heavy beat for that.
Fabulous. Thank you for that, Karen. That's brilliant. Could you just, how did the values in disco change? I think you kind of touched on those, but how did you see kind of disco's values changing through the decade from the beginnings to the end of the decade? How would you kind of plot that, those values?
There was a thriving drug drug subculture, particularly for drugs that would enhance the experience of the dance to the loud music and the flashing lights, like cocaine, amyl nitrate, you know, the 1970s drug Quaalude, which made you feel like you had jelly legs, you know. That was very, very popular in the dance scene, and more so toward the end of the dance scene when it became mainstream. There were massive quantities of drugs ingested in the discotheques. And, you know, there was also the rampant promiscuity and the public sex, while on the dance floor was the central arena of seduction. You know, I mean, everybody was out there on the dance floor with the bass, and they're, you know, dancing around with each other. And it was an arena of seduction. But actually, there was a lot of sex that took place in the other areas of the disco, the bathroom stalls, the stairwells, and so on. You know, it was kind of a hedonist society. It was, I didn't see a lot of that because all I did from 9 till 2 was dance in my little booth. So, but that's what was going on.
Fabulous, fantastic. And just picking up on what you said then about kind of the hedonism of it and the drugs, to me, I mean, it just seems so, such a parallel with the house music and techno music scenes of, I guess, the late 80s onwards and, you know, up until now. I mean, would you say that that they are actually, they're a continuation of disco? Did disco go back kind of underground and come back later in the form of sort of house and techno and, you know, modern electronic dance music?
Well, if you consider one person's theory that says that the record labels actually squashed disco, you could consider also that what happened after that was that all these orchestral sounds that they were using in the disco records were now being put onto the records via keyboard. Which was much more expensive, inexpensive, sorry. It was much more inexpensive to do. So, you know, I believe that that's kind of what happened as we moved from a disco era, which was, you know, encompassing a lot of orchestral, beautiful, well-done music, to something that was produced on a keyboard, which was the electronica age.
Fantastic. Thank you for that, Karen. Do you feel that disco died kind of in 79? I think you left the scene, you said, in 77. So If you could just tell me kind of why you left the scene, and if you feel disco died kind of in around about 79.
Actually, every July 12th, we have a day of mourning for disco. It was a sad day, supposedly the day disco died. And it was an anti-disco demonstration in Chicago. I heard about it. I was not involved in it. But it was a sad day for me. You know, I kind of compare it to rap, for example. When rap came out, people were anti-rap. Not just because of the music, but because of what was happening in the culture. In the black culture, it was very affected by rap music. And, you know, I see a parallel there. And yet, rap was not squashed the way disco was. But anyway, I do believe that disco has never died. It just continues to change. People love to dance. There will always be a place for those who love to dance. And I believe the music is the way.
Fabulous. Fantastic. Thank you for that, Karen. And could you just sort of tell me what you did kind of post-77 when you left the disco, and if you can recall kind of your last days DJing in the discos in 77?
I enjoyed disco right till the day I left. I got married. And left the disco shortly after that to start a production company with my husband. We do television and radio production, videos. We do all sorts of things with audio and video. And in the past year, having, you know, the resurgence of disco again, I began to look back at the disco era and realized that a lot of people that I met during that era, people that I considered friends because they were there every night dancing, and they would come and talk to me and ask for their favorite songs, I realized that they were at an age, 18 to 20 years old, where they could take two paths. You know, they could go down a path that would be good for them, or they could go down a path that would be bad for them. And I felt like I missed that opportunity to help those people. So I wrote a book in the past year. It's called The Miracle Tour. And it's all about helping students from high school to college age to make good choices. And so that's something I feel like I've paid back to the music industry by trying to help students to make a good choice. Because I think because of the media and the effect that it's having on students, they feel like they have to do the things that are portrayed on television and in the music. And it's not true. They can take the high road if they want to. And I feel like that's something I missed, was the ability to help go back and help those people that were making really seriously bad choices at the time. So that's kind of where I am now.
Fabulous. Fantastic. Thank you for that, Karen. I just want to go back, actually, because there's something I probably missed out, actually, from my questions, and was just to get your kind of view on how liberating in those early days, when obviously it was kind of those quite innocent days of the early days of disco in the early 70s, and kind of how liberating it was to go out and be able to sort of dance by yourself without any sort of hassles from anybody else. Could you just kind of paint a picture of how liberating that was for you at the time?
I think I told you someone took me to a disco the first time. And for the first, you know, few weeks that I was there, I felt like I had to have a guy ask me to dance. And the problem with that is that generally speaking, if you dance with a guy, they think there's something up. So, you know, there isn't really a freedom to just go and dance and enjoy it. So, you know, a lot of times I would go and dance with my girlfriends, or I would dance by myself, because you've got a dance floor of people. They can't tell who you're dancing with anyway. So dancing was just fun. And that's kind of the freedom for me, was that you could just go and just enjoy yourself and leave and not be hassled by having to be with a date.
Fabulous, fantastic. Thank you for that, Karen. Referring back to your husband, who was the rock DJ, did he ever kind of get into disco or tap his feet to the odd disco tune, or was he completely against disco? And what was it he didn't like about the music?
Oh, he was a rocker from way back. And it was a really interesting story there, because he was on the radio. He was the number one rock jock in the city. He was, you know, the guy that had all the female following and, you know, this fabulous voice. And, you know, it was all about the personality on the radio. And the music was part of that. You know, it became an extension of the DJ and what he enjoyed. Whereas the disco, we never really had to talk. I mean, our whole thing was trying to get you to dance. And if I couldn't get you to dance, I had failed at my job. Well, funny story about that. My husband was working on the radio. I was working in the disco. And I told you, I programmed several clubs. Well, one of my DJs didn't show up for the night. And it was a very popular disco. And I called my husband and I said, hey, when you get off work, can you go sub in for the disco? And, you know, he was familiar with the turntables that I used and all that, but he had no idea about the music. I mean, he knew the ones that were popular on the radio, you know, Casey and the Sunshine Band, or, you know, some things that they played on the radio, but he had no idea. But I had a list that, you know, kind of a cheat sheet that I used when I mixed from song to song, and I left that with him, and he really did it. He went to this club, he went up there, he used the turntables, he played the songs that he knew, and used my cheat sheet, and he did a great job. And he left and he said, you know, disco's not too bad.
Fantastic. That's a great story. I bet you wish you had some documentary evidence on film or...
Yes. Exactly. I didn't know if you wanted me to talk a little bit about the format of the club and how they sold drinks.
Yes, that'd be great, actually. Yeah, if you could talk about that. Shall I let you just go ahead with that?
Okay, it's just real short.
Yep. Yeah, cool. Yeah.
The company that I worked for, McFadden Ventures, they were perfect. I mean, they knew exactly what they were doing, and they knew that the purpose of the club was to sell drinks. The purpose for me was to have fun. The purpose for them was to sell drinks. And what they decided was that they came up with a format of music that worked the best. It was six songs building in energy and then immediately dropping to three slow songs. And what would happen is you would get more and more and more and more people out on the dance floor during the six songs that built up. And by the end of that sixth song, which was supposed to be the highest energy song you had, those people were exhausted and had been sweating, you know, all that time. And you drop it to a slow song, immediately every person on the dance floor leaves, goes and sits down, and what do? They order a drink. Then, during the three slow songs, you've got all those people out in the audience that don't dance disco. And they are waiting for the slow song so they can snuggle up with their girlfriend. So during the three songs, those people would get up and they would have their dance. And then after three songs, they would sit down. The people who had gotten up and danced crazy, they had gotten their drinks and probably downed the whole thing, and they were up dancing again. And we rotated that all night long. They made so much money. It was incredible. And it worked.
Fabulous, fantastic. Thank you for that, Karen. I just got a couple more questions, actually.
More questions? Did I know how to hustle? Yes, I do.
I just wanted to ask you about, because the word disco has now become kind of, when people, when you say disco, people think of songs like Casey and the Sunshine Band or Car Wash. But in the early days of disco, 73, 74, I guess the music you were playing was more kind of up-tempo soul or R&B. Is that correct?
Well, actually in 74, I was in college and I was getting my chops up. I worked at a couple of different clubs, one of which I played not only what you're saying, the R&B music, which was the beginning of disco, because a lot of the Motown music, that's really what that was. It was just dance music. And, you know, then I would also pull some country and some, you know, different types of songs. I was really learning the industry at that time. And by the time I moved back to Houston in the end of 76. No, it would be 70, the early 76. Most of the disco was out there, and it was great stuff. That was, you know, at the beginning was the disco duck I told you about, and there were a lot of great disco songs at that time. And yes, it did come from the R&B music. One thing I was going to talk about that you didn't ask me was the 12-inch single format you had mentioned yesterday.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. In 1976, I think, was when about that time that they discovered really the 45 was not long enough. It was only, you know, 3 to 5 minutes or whatever. And there was a guy, what was it? Oh, Tom Moulton was the guy that came up with the idea to do the 12-inch single. And it was just a remarkable invention as far as the DJ was concerned, because not only were you able to keep people on the dance floor for a long time and they loved it, but it gave you a bathroom break because it was so long. And, you know, DJs don't really get a break. So it was a good thing for us.
Fantastic. And was the sound quality better on a 12-inch single as well, sonically?
Actually, yes. The 12-inch single was designed with a higher-grade plastic. The grooves were farther apart. And, you know, we used a special needle because we had to rock it back and forth to get it just in the right place so the beat would hit right in the right spot. And so, therefore, you know, just like in the current day scratching, you would actually scratch the album. And so with these wider grooves and the higher quality plastic, you not only got a louder and better sound, but you actually were able to scratch on it and you weren't able to, you didn't really hurt the album. So it was a great thing. The DJs loved it.
Fantastic. And what type of turntables did you use at that time?
I used the Mark IIs. That's what everybody used. The Techniques. I actually still own both of mine. So, yes, with a black bottom, you had to have that.
Yeah, they are the connoisseur DJ's decks of choice, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And, you know, you were slowing down songs and speeding up songs. And so, you know, you had to have a really good turntable. And they made these little things. They were made out of felt. And you put them under the album so that it would slide easily. That's what we used to mix with. You know, Segway was... Your goal was to keep the people on the dance floor. I mean, that was my goal. And so what I would do is I would find a song. You know, I was building in tempo. And so the song I loved was a song called Best of My Love, because it was the epitome of a transition song. I would play all these slow songs, and then I needed a song to break out that people would recognize that wouldn't be fast yet, but it would have a really great beat and be able to transition to those faster songs. And Best of My Love was like that. It was perfect for that. Just like I think Shake Your Booty was kind of that same, and that's the way I like it, same kind of tempo. But it was a transition song into the faster songs.
Fabulous, fantastic. I was just trying to remember who Best of My Love, who that is by now, actually, because I love that tune.
Let me think. The Emotions. The Emotions. Mm-hmm. And I had a song that I always played to close up the evening, and it was Gloria Gaynor's Never Can Say Goodbye. because I had such a hard time saying goodbye in the evening. I loved disco. I loved to dance. And it was the kind of thing where when I left there, I couldn't wait to get back the next day to play again.
Fantastic. Brian, a song just occurred to me, actually. I Believe in Miracles.
Yes.
Do you know that one?
Yes. Great song. And, you know, another one that... Gloria Gaynor, who we were talking about, did I Will Survive. She also did a song called, I can't remember the name of it right now. And then Thelma Houston did Don't Leave Me This Way, which is a fabulous song that nobody ever talks about. And there was a couple that did disco. I don't know if you realize this. It was George McRae and Gwen McRae. And George McRae did the song Rock Your Baby, which was absolutely my favorite song. There's actually a video on YouTube of George McRae doing that song. I love it.
I think, is that one of kind of the early ones from about 74, that one? Is that one of the early disco
yes.
tracks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just want to also ask you, actually, something I forgot, I think. Were you aware, kind of, I don't know if you were in Houston, of radio stations changing their formats and sacking a lot of sort of rock DJs and changing over to like an all-disco format? Were you aware of anything like that happening at the time?
Yes, actually, that was the station I listened to. The first disco station, they didn't play any commercials for about 6 months. And it was great. They played nothing but the music. They didn't segue. Which means, you know, we would match up the beats so that people wouldn't leave the dance floor. But they just played back-to-back-to-back-to-back music.
I mean, what would have been your husband's response to kind of, say, a rock station changing virtually overnight to an all-disco policy? Would he? I guess he would have been pretty annoyed at something like that.
Yes, because that was kind of the beginning of the death of the DJ on the radio station. Because with the disco music, it was all about the music. It was not about the DJ. His whole thing in the 70s, that was the classic era of radio. In fact, he's nominated this year for the Radio Hall of Fame. He was a very great DJ. And it's all about the personality in that era. And they could play what they wanted. It was more of a, you know, you had a format, but they played the music they really liked. So the music was really an extension of the DJ. So when the disco music took over the radio, it was not about the DJ anymore. It was all about the music. In fact, people used to come in, and I had these great big 10-inch reels that I recorded on tape at night. I would start it at 9 o'clock, and I would put it at a really low speed, 3 3/4, and I would record the entire night on tape, or two tapes sometimes. And people would come up and they would pay me, you know, $250, and they would take that and play it at their party that weekend. So it was very popular.
Wow! So you were kind of doing pioneering the DJ mixtapes, which we've got so many of these days.
Yes, yes. Except it was live from the club, so you know you had a little bit of the whole. You know, the energy from the crowd there as well. And even though I had a microphone and sometimes I would leave it on, I never spoke. If I spoke, it was rare because it was all about the music.
That's brilliant, Karen, because it just sounds so similar to kind of a lot of the dance music we've had kind of coming out over the past 15 years, I guess, since the mm-hmm. late 80s. It sounds just very much like a lot of the clubs we have now where it's all about the music, the DJ never speaks, it's all about the mixing, keeping people on the dance floor and building those peaks up and then bringing back people back down and then building them up again. Mm-hmm. It just sounds very, very similar.
Well, you know, the rock... guys began to do disco. I mean, you've got the Rolling Stones and David Bowie and Queen and Rod Stewart and Kiss and, you know, all the people that were out there that were doing rock, all of a sudden they started doing disco as well. I remember Boz Scaggs, you know, he was always the singer-songwriter guy. Well, I started using his stuff all the time in the disco. He was great.
What was your view on some of that? Did you view some of them as bandwagon jumpers and a bit cheesy doing it? Or, I mean, were you quite receptive to them?
Oh, if it was a good song, I didn't care who did it.
Hello?
I'm here.
Sorry, I thought I'd lost you then, actually. No. Okay, that's fabulous.
It did get very quiet, didn't it?
It did. I just want to round up, really, Karen. Now,
okay.
Is there anything you've got there which you want to mention at all?
Not that I can think of.
I think we've done a good job at covering kind of all the bases.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you if you had kind of if you had a favorite era of the disco era, the era which summed up for you the best part of it, if there was a period where you thought it was definitely quality wise or song wise it was at its best.
I think 75 and 76, because that was the era of the line dancing. So you could just go out there and dance. You didn't have to have a date, you didn't have to have a friend. If people lined up in a line, you joined in, and it was a blast. And disco also started getting more radio hits. So you could actually, even if you were in a store somewhere, you could actually hear some of your favorite disco songs played.
Fabulous. Thank you. And just kind of in summary, just do you think, did disco die? Which side of the fence do you sit on there?
Oh, I hope it hasn't died. I love disco. I love dance. I think that, I could do without the Kiana shirts, and I could do without the pickup lines and the, people trying to impress. But the music was great, and dance is great. I hate that it's been warped into something that it was never intended to be. But I hope disco never dies.
Fabulous. That was fantastic. Thank you so much for that, Karen. That was brilliant.
Thank you so much. You're brilliant.
Really, really good. I've really, really enjoyed that, and I really appreciate your time and the fantastic, fantastic answers. So thank you once again.
And if you think of anything else that you wanna cover, I'll be glad to help you out. I really appreciate you doing this, and I'm so excited that somebody's covering it, and I'm anxious to hear the final result. I want to hear what the Chicagoans have to say.
Yes, yes. Well, we'll be going over there. Well, I'm not going there, sadly. So Joe, the executive producer, is going there. So she's going there to see what the Chicago, the anti-disco brigade, what they think, or what they thought of the time, if they've what their view was. I know that a part of it was a marketing plan by the baseball team to get more people in the stadiums. But it's going to be interesting to have the two sides, and it's shaping up to be a really good documentary. So I'll keep you informed of when it goes out on the BBC, because you'll be able to hopefully listen to it on the BBC iPlayer online. But I'll also make sure that you get a copy on CD of the programme, a hard copy. Once the programme's been mixed and aired in the UK, then I can make sure I can get you a copy on CD out.
That'll be great. Thank you so much.
Fabulous. Well, if there's anything I've forgotten, I'll give you a call. But I think...